The Fan on Demand.
Time for Tim and Sid. Oh, yeah. It's time for Real Sports Talk with Tim McAuliffe and Sid Sexero.
Thank you very much, Sheepdog. Still to come on this edition of Tim and Sid. Mere moments from now, NHL's Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly will join us. Dmitry Chesnikov will join us. A member of the Pro Hockey Writers Association. A Russian-American. And I'll explain why we're doing that in a couple seconds.
Time for Tim and Sid.
And of course,
time for Tim and Sid.
The NFL.
Time for Tim and Sid.
Could spontaneously combust. I may be overstating
just a little bit.
But doesn't it feel like there is way too much going on right now for the NFL to handle? I mean, they've got people they hired on Monday making two decisions on two of what? Top five in their position as we speak? Someone who they hired Monday, their Tuesday job is to figure out what they're doing with Greg Hardy and Adrian Peterson. I don't know if that's chartered territory for any professional league.
You want uncharted territory? Roger Goodell bailed on Jerry Richardson of the Panthers on his night.
Mm-hmm.
Roger Goodell bailed on the opening of Levi's Stadium after promising like 18 months previously to be there Sunday night for the opening of the 49ers new stadium. Mm-hmm. He has gone into radio silence since the CBS interview. Roger Goodell.
Yeah, they still haven't said anything about Adrian Peterson. The Vikings did.
Oh, the Vikings did. We'll get to that later. My God.
So Adam Rank will join us 3 o'clock hour. We'll walk into that. Sid David DiCarvalho writes in and says, we need more soccer coverage. And I know that Champs League hitting full swing, including a little CanCon.
Liverpool today, Tim, for the first time since 2009, will play a Champions League game because they've sucked since.
Mm-hmm.
Last year was their first good season in a long time, so they're back in the Champions League. Bulgarian side Ludogorets will be in Liverpool today, and starting in goal for the Bulgarian side on Sportsnet 1, Ludogorets against Liverpool.
Sorry, what?
Ludogorets. Will be a Canadian. Milan Borjan. Croatian-born, grew up in Winnipeg and Hamilton.
Yep.
Canadian international, he was in net at BMO against Jamaica.
And the reason why they won 3-1.
Yep. He is starting for the Bulgarian side at Anfield today on Sportsnet 1, so we wish the kid all the best. It's a huge one.
One of the reasons. I mean, he can't score goals because he's a keeper, but he made some huge saves.
We all know he's the guy.
I was leafing through the New York Times a couple of weeks ago, as I'm wont to do when I'm attempting to feel somewhat smart, and I came across a column with the title, Russia Goes to War with McDonald's, Soviet Style. And I went through it, and there were actually a couple different other ones that I ended up going through as well, just because it caught my eye. And the column talked about how McDonald's once looked at as hope for capitalism in Russia. Remember, I mean, anyone who's old enough to remember the first McDonald's opening in Moscow,
it's a big deal,
remembers the scenes of lines around the block, and this was the first bastion of capitalism. When they first started appearing in the 90s, that's kind of how it was portrayed in New Russia. They're now being closed in the midst of worsening ties between the U.S. and Russia. And the Russians are saying this is happening because of health code violations, which apparently is now a veiled phrase for geopolitics. And I was reading up on the back and forth, and as I was doing that, a report hit the wire about KHL president Alexander Medvedev being asked about the possibility of Russian players leaving North America and returning home to play in their country's domestic league, the KHL. And he said, are you talking about guys like Ovechkin and Malkin returning to the KHL? Let's wait. There may be some pleasant surprises.
Uh-oh.
And the KHL-NHL transfer agreement expires on June 30th. So we'll walk down this road with Dmitry Chesnikov, maybe even to talk a little bit about it with Bill Daly. But Dmitry Chesnikov will join us at around 2:40, and we'll see if there's somehow that this Cold War envelops hockey in any way, shape, or form.
The McDonald's thing, as long as the quarter pounder is left alone, I'm fine with it.
They always add the other meal that is native to that area.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to make the locals feel. But if you're talking quarter pounder
just,
cheese.
Just leave it alone, man.
Yeah, I understand.
Never thought I'd segue off that to Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League.
Quarter
pounder with cheese. Time for everything in my career. Bill, how you doing?
I'm good, guys. How are you?
Pretty good. First things first. Lester Patrick Award for you and Paul Holmgren today. This is a big time honor. I would assume you've done a lot of work with USA Hockey. When did you find out you were getting it, and how do you feel today?
Obviously very humbled, very privileged that I get really to operate and execute the kind of the will of the league and the board. And obviously one of our important initiatives is to grow hockey everywhere. But growing hockey at the grassroots level in the United States is a big initiative and goal and objective of our board, and I get to do it as part of my living. So it's great, but it's more a credit really to the organization I work for than it is to me.
Bill Daly joining us here on Tim and Sid. 22 days to puck drop. Are you ready? And how, as a deputy commissioner, do you get ready for puck drop?
You know what? I'm not ready as of today. I think obviously there's it's a really busy time of the year. It's been a busy summer for certainly everybody around here at the league office. But we're tying up the loose ends and getting ready, and we have veteran camps opening at the end of this week, and I think everybody's really, really excited for puck drop. So I've been responding to a lot of emails today, and you know the highlight for me is it's 22 days to puck drop.
I want to flip the script on us. I know you've seen some of the things that Rogers has put together for this near groundbreaking 12-year deal. Do you think we're ready for puck drop in 22 days?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's been a whirlwind, there's no doubt. And even from the time that we concluded the deal, which was last November, to be able to turn it around and ramp it up for kind of this, comprehensive global launch across Canada, across all platforms, is a major, major job. But I will say I've been more than impressed that with Rogers and their corporate leadership and their ability to get things done and get us ready. And we're very excited and very pleased with all the things they've done. And I do think they're ready. I think it's going to be a wild ride, but I think we're all ready for it.
Bill Daly here on Tim and Sid. Bill, you mentioned there's a bunch to get done on your end. What's the priority?
Well, I mean, right now... I'm still working with our officials association on concluding a collective bargaining agreement. I anticipate that will get done. We've been having good discussions throughout the summer, made a lot of progress, and hopefully it's a matter of dotting the I's and crossing the T's and getting that done. But there's obviously a host of things to get done with the team's camps and a lot of the rule changes that we've implemented for this season, and making sure the players and the clubs are well educated about those. We have a Kraft Hockeyville event early in training camp. I think actually next Wednesday, which will be exciting for everybody. Again, it's a matter of getting everything kind of ramped up and prepared and ready for puck drop.
When you're talking about the officials, how much do you learn from other leagues' dealings with, whether it be rule changes or, dealing with the officials? The NFL had a hell of a time not only getting that deal done, but explaining it off to the public. Do you sit and listen and learn, or even talk to commissioners about how they deal with it in their sports?
Well, I think you're aware of your surroundings, and obviously, while not identical, there are similar relationships and similar things you have to be knowledgeable about. Having said that, I think we have a unique relationship with our officials. I've been working in the league for almost 18 years now, and the relationship with our officials association and doing the collective bargaining agreements with that association has been a primary responsibility of mine since I came to the league. So we've developed a relationship over time, and I think it's one of mutual respect. We certainly respect the job our officials do. They're the best hockey officials in the world, and I think that's well recognized throughout the world of hockey. And you know, it's a matter of striking the right balance. And there's different emphases at different points in time. But as I said, I think this negotiation has proceeded along well, and I'm looking forward to concluding it.
Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner of the National Hockey League, here on Tim and Sid. Since we're on officials, there's a couple of things we want to hit on with you, Bill. But since you mentioned officials, I know recently the competition committee has put forth a couple of initiatives. One of them is aimed at eradicating diving, probably one of the toughest things to eradicate in sports today. And the escalating punishments of $2,000 and $3,000 and $4,000, I mean, the intention is for that to work. But do you think that's enough of a deterrent with millionaires to stop them from diving in your league?
Well, it's a fair question. And obviously, over time, throughout our collective bargaining with the Players Association, we've talked about fine levels. But what I will say about our players is that fines are meaningful, really, regardless of the amount. And I think it has to do with essentially being called out. And I think that's really the purpose of the fine, being called out. As you said, I think the players came to us and have talked to us about wanting to clamp down on diving and embellishing and what they view as kind of cheating the integrity of the game a little bit with respect to that going on the ice, the unsportsmanlike conduct nature of it. And so, you know, we worked together on a framework that we thought would be effective. We think this will be effective. Obviously, you know, if it's not effective, you reevaluate and you see if you ramp it up in ways that make it more effective. But we're anxious to give it a try. I think the times we have fined for diving in the past, they actually did have an impact. That was right coming out of the 2004-2005 labor negotiation. And then there was a period where we did not fine for this conduct you know, so we're going to try it again and see if it works.
Bill Daly joining us here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Earlier on in the show, we were talking about the KHL and the NHL and how hockey could be dragged into some geopolitics given some certain situations around the world. Are you worried about the KHL-NHL transfer deal?
Well, let me set the record straight. We really don't have a transfer agreement with
a memorandum of understanding.
Yeah, we have an agreement, and really the agreement basically confirms that each of the KHL and the NHL will respect each other's contracts. I will tell you, as a practical and legal matter, the NHL would respect the KHL's contracts regardless of whether if we had a memorandum of understanding. I would hope that would be the case in the KHL as well, because I don't think anybody looks to openly violate the terms and obligations that exist under a valid contract. So I'm not sure that the existence of that MOU or the expiration of that MOU on June 30th of next year, by the way, this has been a year-to-year relationship that we've had with the KHL, where we've renewed the MOU on a yearly basis, and so I would, it's not as if we're at the end of a multi-year deal and you know, the future is uncertain. What I'm saying is I don't think the MOU in and of itself is kind of the key issue here. Obviously, world events could play a role in any scenario, not necessarily just with Russia, but with any country. So I certainly respect that as a possibility. But at this point in time, and I've told the clubs this as well, the clubs who have asked me, I don't anticipate any rupture in the relationship between the KHL and the NHL, and I fully expect that the KHL and their clubs will fully respect valid NHL contracts, as we will for the KHL.
Did you get in touch with their president, or did anyone in the NHL offices get in touch with the KHL president when he made the comments that you know, next season there might be some pleasant surprises, so let's wait?
No. I have to say that, you know, that there, you know, one, you have to, you always have to take with a grain of salt some of the translations and comments that come from the Russian press and media. I have found my experience over time is they're not always 100% accurate. Sometimes also they're tongue-in-cheek. I didn't give a lot of thought or have a lot of concern with respect to the comments that were attributed to Mr. Medvedev.
Fair enough.
Bill Daly here on Tim and Sid. Bill, you and Gary Bettman, commissioner of the NHL, you guys, you know, you listen to the news, you know what's going on, you know some other leagues around you are in the middle of some serious stuff here from a PR perspective. And I read that Bud Selig in Major League Baseball, they are revisiting their player discipline practices should anything arise. I'm going to ask you, in terms of your current CBA, if something arises that is just disastrous from a PR standpoint for your league, are you able to act without due process completely running its course? And if that's not the case right now, is that something you would like to revisit in any way with the NHLPA?
Well, our rights in that regard and player discipline are spelled out pretty specifically in Article 18 of our CBA, and we do have the rights in certain circumstances to act prior to a hearing. And so again, I think I don't want to generalize, but we are comfortable that the disciplinary powers we have, both pursuant to our collective bargaining agreement, but also our constitution, our bylaws, our standard players contract, all of which are incorporated into our collective bargaining agreement, are more than sufficient to protect the league's interests and reputation.
Have you had to revisit any of your ideas? Given what's, I mean, we've seen basically the morality in sport be discussed for 3 weeks on mainstream, you know, not just sports stations, not just shows like this, the mainstream media, CNN, all those things. Have you had to revisit any of the league's ideas on where the role is on off the ice discipline?
Well, I think stories and events that transpire in the world, you know, cause you all to cause us all and should cause us all to reevaluate kind of where we are, what we have in place, what we're doing as a league on issues like those. And I would say that last week's events are no different with respect to the National Hockey League. Having said that, and I alluded to it in my previous answer, I mean, I think we're comfortable with our approach to issues of these types, both from a preventative standpoint, and, you know, I'd be the first to say that we educate our players very, very extensively on personal conduct issues, including specifically with respect to domestic violence, and that's done at a variety of levels from a variety of sources. On an annual basis. So I'm very comfortable with the approach that we have taken to this point. And as I said, I'm comfortable with our ability to handle a situation in the event we have one. Having said that, I'll also say that, you know, knock on wood, I feel fortunate to be involved in the National Hockey League because I don't think our experience with our players has been has ever really put us in a place, I shouldn't say ever, but has put us in a place where we have to be defensive on these issues. I think we have very responsible players as a whole.
Bill Daly, you're on Tim and Sid. Anything else in terms of league discipline, Timmy?
No.
Okay,
no.
Let's move on here.
Yeah.
All right, so Bill, if you want to tell us when Vegas is getting a team, you can just do it now. We'll just break it. If you want to break it now, it's up to you. Whatever. It's just the three of us talking.
That's fair. I can't give you a date. I can't even give you a year. I can't even give you any kind of certainty that Vegas is getting the team. What I will say is something, and really echoing something we've been very public about, and the commissioner answers this question a lot. We've had expressions of interest from a variety of cities. I would say Vegas is one of those cities. You know, people who want to own NHL franchises, obviously there are prerequisites involved in owning an NHL franchise and operating it successfully. One is an arena. There happens to be an arena being constructed in Vegas, which certainly enhances its chances of hosting a professional sports franchise one day, whether it be an NBA franchise or an NHL franchise. Having a first-class state-of-the-art arena is one of the prerequisites. Having said all of that, I can't say that we have moved the expansion kind of decision process forward, you know, since the last time we talked about it publicly, which would have been in and around awards in June of last year. We have a lot of other things on our plate, a lot of other priorities, and right now expansion isn't one of them.
Do markets, Bill, with the new arena, and not a team, but with a brand new arena, do they go to the front of the line in your mind? Is that more enticing than future plans, would you say?
Well, I don't think front of the line is the right way to characterize it. As I said, I mean, having an arena is an important prerequisite to having a franchise. So it's one of the pieces of a complicated puzzle, but it's an important piece.
I know you said it's not on the plate right now, but are all the current teams healthy enough to think about expansion?
That's a fair question, and I think from our perspective, how we've answered the expansion questions in the past, we've always focused on the stability of our existing 30 franchises and the health in their current marketplaces, and that continues to be a focus. I will say that I feel in terms of stability, ownership stability and ownership wherewithal, we're in as good a place now as we've been clearly in my tenure at the National Hockey League, which is 18 years now and potentially in the history of the league. So we feel good about where we are as a league and the strength of our franchises, and certainly, you know, how we feel about that does factor into, you know, issues like whether at some point in time in the future we'll, you know, explore expansion.
Bill, I'm no accountant, obviously. I do a 1-4 radio show. But I'm just doing the math in my head. If you got $5.2 billion on a TV deal now as your league stands, and you add Vegas, Seattle, let's just say another team in Toronto, and Quebec City. I'm just throwing out markets. So whatever, top of my head. I think you could get double that in the next TV deal. Just some free advice, do with it what you will. I think you can get $10 billion in this country on an XTV deal.
I appreciate the free advice.
There you go. That's just for you, Bill.
I've watched over the last, we've had this discussion on the show a lot over the last little while. The Clippers just sold for $2 billion. The Buffalo Bills in the NFL set a record for franchise value at $1.4 billion. We just paid $5.2 billion for 12 years of hockey. So we understand how much people love watching sports right now. But does this seemingly unlimited growth have some sort of ceiling that we have yet to see yet?
You know, obviously there's some realistic ceiling. You know, I think what we feel fortunate about being part of the professional sports industry is it is a growing industry. It continues to be growing. It's not stagnant at all. The demand for live professional sports is very vibrant. And, you know, part of that is kind of the nature of the entertainment that we provide, the competition we provide. It's not something that really lends itself to the PVRing and the time shifting. It's something, it's good content, it's rich content, and it's content you consume as a fan in real time for the most part. And that makes our entertainment product something that's a little bit special. Are being collectively the sports industry, not necessarily just hockey.
Yeah.
But it's a feature of our business, which allows for and really supports continued growth.
Yeah, a good 18 years to be with the league. Really appreciate the time. Hopefully we can do this again down the road.
I appreciate it, guys.
Thanks. There's Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner, Chief Legal Officer of the NHL.
It's now going to be like the Toronto question at the Super Bowl every year for the NFL commissioner. Whenever a National Hockey League guy comes on, it's like Quebec City, Toronto, Vegas, Seattle.
Is there anything that drew your attention? Because when you have those conversations, yeah. you understand that you're dealing with a highly intelligent man who knows most of the questions that will be thrown at him and thus has provided himself with some sort of base with which to answer those questions or counter those questions.
The one, and he knocked on, to be fair to Bill, he knocked on wood when he said it. When he said he was, based on some history with his players, he feels good about maybe not having to deal with some yeah. of the challenges other leagues
are
dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's always a dangerous thing to say because you don't know what's around the corner. But he did knock on wood when he said it, and yeah. I think we had to bring it up to him. And you can't tell me every other commissioner isn't having a serious discussion Whoa. Behind closed doors going, all right, what if? Because the NFL's written the book on how to screw it up.
If I knew anyone at the NFL office right now with any kind of stead, I would be talking to them and picking their brain on how they've dealt with this. Because you're right. And, you know, I tried to, you know how I've been following this football story. And, we've had long, convoluted conversations about, you know, the future of football and whether or not CTE lends to any of this and whether or not the concussions lend to any of this and whether or not this $9 billion franchise could ever take a significant hit. And I heard someone from Subway saying, are you kidding? No one's walking away from advertising with this league. They produce 34 of the top 35 shows every year. Like, they're just so dominant. If you walk out the door, someone's just waiting to take your spot.
Throwing money at your face.
Throwing
money at your face.
But I've looked at this every which way, and I tried. There's a lot of people saying, well, in NFL, these guys are coddled and they're entitled, and what are the numbers? And we ended up with the 78 domestic abuse cases since 2000, or at least guys charged with domestic abuse for cases up over the 80s. I tried looking for those numbers in the NHL, and Semyon Varlamov last year got into some kind of highly publicized trouble.
Oh, yeah.
And the charges ended up being dismissed because prosecutors said they couldn't prove the case beyond a reasonable doubt. So it's not like they're immune to it, but it's unbelievable when you contrast the two, and trust me, I thought I would find more in hockey. I couldn't. It's something the NHL should really be proud of. Now, do they have their problems? Yes. Do they act like some of their problems, like PEDs, don't exist? Yes. But by and large, done pretty well. And yeah. and no one putting you in a tough spot.
Yeah.
I looked at the numbers that I searched the internet looking for guys that have gone through problems in the NHL. And it's like off the top of your head, you're like Patrick Kane. Like,
but that was kind of hilarious.
Joe Corvo got in trouble. Rick Tocchet.
Yeah.
There's been some highly publicized drug cases over the years, you know, but at the high level, you know, some DUIs that were highly publicized, but
some arrests that never happened.
Right.
Some arrests in Ottawa that never took place. Well, that were just completely fictional and never.
Sidney Crosby.
Yeah.
Right.
Sidney Crosby's in prison. What? Yeah, he's not here.
Which is why it was such a huge story.
Our bad. Sorry. But listen, every league has an issue. Like, are you telling me Zenon Konopka is the high end of the NHL's drug testing policy?
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me. Like, nothing's perfect. But I just, it's just funny. To me, when he said about that, I found interesting.
Yeah, and the other thing, I really think that the KHL-NHL thing, given what we know about Vladimir Putin and his love for hockey and the political pressure that can sometimes be placed on athletes in that country, I mean, we saw it with owners in that country. Roman Abramovich, I can't say it, easy for me to say. I mean, he was investing so much money outside the country that basically those inside the country rebelled and forced him to spend money inside the country, right? Like, they can do things that other countries haven't been able to do. And I wonder, as we talk to Dmitry Chesnokov next, if hockey is the next big thing.
Just leave the quarter pounder cheese alone. Leave McDonald's alone.
Man. When's the next time you're going to Russia?
3 weeks.
Oh, you got a trip?
I didn't tell you.
Oh, nice.
Nice. I'm going to see Sochi after the fact. It's way cheaper.
Right.
Hotels are free.
They come with wolves.
This is when you go to Sochi right now. This is the time.
Okay, let's take the break. When we come back, we'll dive deep into this NHL-KHL Memorandum of Understanding and whether or not that understanding may dissipate with geopolitics from around the world. This is Tim and Sid on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.
Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca.
Still to come on this edition of Tim and Sid on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Coast to Coast on Sportsnet 360. Enough NFL talk to make you puke. Good, bad, and ugly, we will tackle it in the 3 o'clock hour.
The hell were the Colts doing at the end of that game last night?
Especially when you and I not only made the Colts our Super Bowl pick from the AFC, but also had the Colts against the spread in our 5 picks each and every week. Darren Sproles ate them up. That's what happened. And a key interception. But we'll get into that with Adam Rank.
He might be the most important offseason acquisition in the league, period.
Darren Sproles? Yeah. The way Chip Kelly uses him?
Bingo.
So earlier this hour, I was talking about leafing through the New York Times and getting kind of caught in that internet game where you just keep reading story related to other story related to other story. And I started with Russia goes to war with McDonald's. And it was at the start of probably the end of August, start of September. Then came the story about KHL president Alexander Medvedev being asked about the possibility of Russian players leaving North America and returning home to play in Mother Russia. And his response was, are you talking about guys like Ovechkin and Malkin returning to the KHL? Next season, there may be pleasant surprises. Let's wait. Well, you would ask, well, what's different about next season? Well, the memorandum of understanding between the NHL and the KHL ceases to exist. It's been a year-to-year thing, but it ceases to exist on June 30th. Is there any way that Russia goes to war with the NHL the way that the New York Times is suggesting that they're going to war with McDonald's?
Few people can help us answer that.
Yeah. Well, we can't because we're morons.
One of the smartest guys we know is on the line, contributes to the Puck Daddy blog, a fantastic writer, Dmitry Chesnikov, joining us. Dmitry, welcome back to Tim and Sid. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Dmitry, this Cold War business angle from the KHL towards North America, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's the threat? What is the threat of Russian hockey players just not being here anymore?
Well, as far as anymore, I mean, what is the threat, or rather, what the reason would be?
You know? A lot of money.
In my view.
A lot of money, and they don't like America.
Yeah. Well, you know, a lot of money. How sustainable is that going to be? Because even if you're looking at someone like Ilya Kovalchuk, who obviously retired and then unretired and resurfaced in Russia, he's been, you know, he never denied the possibility of ever trying to come back when he's 34, 35. You know, would he be able to do it? But, you know, if he comes back to the NHL, well, Jaromír Jágr did that. You know, maybe there is a way for Ilya Kovalchuk to do it. So, you know, but I think, in my opinion, the main reason why the NHL or the Russians in the NHL may become extinct like dinosaurs is because just they're not producing enough talent rather than, you know, luring guys like Ovechkin or Malkin away with money. And as far as Alexander Medvedev, and, you know, I respect the person, but at the same time, that comment was more for quotes rather than having to do something with the reality. If players do come back, someone like Pavel Datsyuk at the end of his career, that's one thing, you know. But as far as if you're talking about someone like Malkin or Alex Ovechkin, I think they still pretty much belong in the NHL. But at the same time, you know, in 10 years, the things have changed so much in Russian hockey that they're just too few for the Russians in the NHL to really make an impact of the Cold War.
We just talked to Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner of the NHL, and his suggestion was that oftentimes the subtleties in Russian journalism can be left at the wayside for perhaps a headline or two. Is that what Medvedev was attempting to do, or at least your interpretation of what he's attempting to do? Or is there any cause for concern in, say, Pittsburgh or Washington?
There's absolutely no cause for concern. Again, you know, as far as this particular interview, I watched the actual video when he said what he said. And it was like the last question, and he was skating off. It was during a charity game, charity event.
Right.
He was sort of skating off and laughing it off, you know. And the point was that the media, you know, in Russia took that quote and run with it. And sort of, again, I'm not saying that it's taken out of the context, but it is. Right. And is it a threat? No. You know, in the long term goals, if I were on the KHL board or you know, governing that league, I have a lot of things to accomplish together with the NHL rather than apart, especially with things like the Olympics participation and getting some kind of monetary compensation out of it. I mean, there's a lot more for the KHL to lose in this fight if they decide to pick it, which I think they won't.
Why do you think it's been so contentious up until this point? Because if you are to believe most of what you read, there has been a little bit of contentious nature between the negotiations and the memorandum of understanding.
The KHL, you know, tried to establish themselves. They tried to get those stars, especially the Russian players, to come back and for the younger ones to stay. It's sort of been working on a certain level. Again, not at the superstar level because, you know, smart people in the KHL and, you know, those who run the clubs, they understand the best ones will want to play with the best, right? It's sort of know where you belong. You know, and KHL is not the best league in the world. It may be the best league in Europe, you know, especially if they start adding clubs from like Sweden and Finland. They added one from Finland. They can grow. But at the same time, it has to be sustainable growth. You can't add clubs and then at the same time lose a few like they do pretty much every offseason and other clubs struggling. Because, you know, you talk about big money, but then this big money only exists for certain players in certain clubs, and they can only sustain it for maybe a couple of years, not giving out 10-year, $124 million contract like Alex Ovechkin got. So it's a reality check, right? Certain officials, they say certain things, and they're out there in the media. I think they got the clicks, they got what they want, but reality is just different.
Dmitry Chesnokov here on Tim and Sid. Dmitry, the point you make is valid in terms of the KHL and things they still need to accomplish with the NHL. I completely hear you, but I'm going above a level above that, right to Putin and people running the country. And when you have a moment like this with a guy who has as much power as Vladimir Putin has, athletes are always very vulnerable from a propaganda standpoint, PR. We all know how this can go sometimes. How susceptible are Russian players to a man of this power?
I think there's one thing. It's not just about Russian players, but maybe Russian people. That people like in the West and North America, including Europe, don't understand that people in Russia, the majority of them, actually like Putin. You know, whether we like it or not, whether we understand it or not, especially having lived here for so long. As far as players being dragged into this whole propaganda, I think that's just not going to work this day and age. You know, you either want to do it or you don't want to do it, right? It's not the Soviet Union. You know, you don't have to go there like, you know, maybe someone like, you know, Ilya Bryskalov, right?
Right.
You know, or others, or Pavel Datsyuk. You know, they don't need to do that. And especially they're so high profile that putting any kind of pressure on them is just going to backfire. And I just don't believe there's any kind of pressure on these guys to really be on the forefront of politics, especially since most of them really want to keep politics away or out of sports.
Politics has worked its way in, obviously, given the tensions in the area. And is there any doubt or maybe worry that politics could cost the KHL more teams?
It could certainly impede their progress. It could certainly impede their, even at the level of, let's say, you know, they attract a medium type star from Sweden, right? So they go and play in the KHL for some club, and they're getting their paycheck deposits in a Russian bank. right? Because of the sanctions, for example, they may cause them to take an extra step or two to actually transfer that money over to the country, right?
Right.
That can certainly hurt the KHL, right? Or some players may think, well, I don't want to go through this. I don't even know if my money's ever going to get there. So it's sort of these day-to-day things. You know, this is how the sanctions and sort of politics can affect them. But at the same time, I think, you know, on a larger scale, I mean, the sanctions, all of this will pass. Again, the league, if they stop their growth for now, stop hitting clubs, just work on what you have and sort of grow the league. Because, again, they do have the people who can do it. They do have the people working for certain clubs who learned a lot from the NHL and from the West in terms of marketing and really trying to generate revenue for the clubs rather than sucking the money out of the sponsors. Yeah, they can do it, but at the same time, they you know, it's at a certain point they need to do a reality check. It's not just about expansion or signing a player or two for you know a couple of years. It's more about, do you really want to grow? Do you really want to build this foundation for years to come and grow that league from that perspective? And that still remains to be seen.
Dimitri, really appreciate you bringing in the in-depth knowledge, and we're 22 days away from puck drop, so the next time we talk to you, I bet we'll be talking about stuff on the ice.
Oh, definitely. I'm really looking forward to that.
Thanks, Dimitri.
Thanks so much, guys.
There is Dimitri Chesnikov of Yahoo, who does some work with the Puck Daddy blog, and of course is a Russian-American.
You know, listen, it's a story that's not going anywhere. And I think, I mean, at its core, a lot of businesses in Russia obviously are being hit heavily with these sanctions that are going on from the West.
Right.
You know, to assume you try and hurt some Western properties with some of your own business, I think is a completely plausible thing to throw out there.
Right.
And that's kind of where we're going with this.
Yeah, and right now they've targeted American businesses that are there, even though, say, McDonald's, from my very base reading, but enough research and footnote, a bolt like the New York Times to say, you know, McDonald's, 80% to 90% of the business that they do in Russia is Russian.
Yeah.
In fact, they've been given awards for how they are locally owned and operated and using all Russian materials, businesses. So it's interesting because McDonald's was the start of capitalism way back in the 90s, and now they could be tearing it down in the name of geopolitics.
It all goes down to supersize me, doesn't it?
Yeah,
always
says the guy who once had a fajita diet.
From why you got to keep telling that story? I thought it was going to work. I was trying to look good for you, trying to look pretty. Alex Sixero, Timmy,
it worked.
Thank you. I look great. The Tony. Hold on, no. It's a serious story. Kill it. Tony Stewart investigation has been going on in NASCAR.
Yeah,
I thought it was done, but you brought up a few days ago, I think.
Yeah, last week they had announced, the local DA had announced that they would announce what they were doing. I don't know why they were waiting. It's not like a Survivor where you tease it before you go to break and then say you're going to announce something next week.
The Tony Stewart case will be taken to a grand jury in, quote, the near future. This according to the DA office in Ontario County. It was August 9th that Tony Stewart in an accident, still call an accident, killed Kevin Ward Jr. So it is going to a grand jury, the evidence they have found, and they'll let them figure it out, which is very interesting.
It doesn't say anything about what the charge would be.
No. Just whatever they have planned is taking that next step.
What? I guess it's just modern day that we discuss all these steps, but it seems awkward to me that they're letting a little bit trickle out at a time on this story.
A lot of DA, listen, I think a lot of people are on to district attorneys now.
Right.
This is happening purposely. Some of these guys are trying to be rock stars too.
Right. Trying to get their name out there so that it's.
It happens all the time.
All right. We got to say goodbye to Ottawa, but we'll continue on with Tim and Sid next on the Sportsnet Radio Network and Sportsnet 360.